welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the interwebs is Joe Crazy Writer. How you doing on this snowy May day, Joe?
Hang on. I'm almost leveled up in Castle Age. I got three more clicks. Ah, there we go. Made it. I'm sorry, what? Are we recording?
How are you doing on this snowy May day?
I am in what I would call a limbo. Because although it is New Comic Book Day, I am
the limbo dance?
I am not doing any new comics today.
Oh, really?
I mean, and oddly enough, I've actually read all the comics I had. If you remember last time I was talking about how I just kind of read them when I get around to them. I don't like rush through them all and then wonder why I waste my time. So, as you know, this Friday or Saturday is Free Comic Book Day.
Free!
Yay! Which is good. And I don't know when the podcasts go up, but...
This one will go up on Friday morning.
Okay, so...
A solo podcast that went up on Thursday, the second part of the New Universe podcast.
Ooh, I might have to download that. I'm not going to listen to it, just download it.
Well, good. Download it, hand it to friends. When people come through the scanner, say, here, you know, put it on a CD, give it to them.
And they'll look at me and go, I don't read New Universe.
Or they'll look at you and go, what's a CD?
What's that? Can't you cut it in half and make a weapon on it? Yeah, well, you could, but by God, we're not going to let little knives on board the plane. Trust me, if somebody can take a frickin' plane down with a little knife, it's going down. That's just it. I'm sorry. Anyways, what were you talking about? Oh.
Free comic book.
Yeah, free. We're going to meet at Uncle Sven's in St. Paul at noon, me and Corey. Noon. So if anybody wants to join us and just mock us. And after that, I have no idea what we're doing, but. We're going to have some fun, get some free comic books. So
I say we wander around to other comic shops.
The reason why, yeah, I was going to say we maybe hit some comic stores we haven't hit in a while and we can avail our listeners of our tales of our wanderings, fighting villains and eating bonbons. But the other reason I'm waiting to pick up my comics is because they're doing 10% off everything in the store. And if you have their subscription card, you get 20% off.
Ooh.
I was having lunch with Mr. Gooba yesterday. And
Former partner in crime.
Yep. And I actually talked with him. He's interested in, or he'd be willing to sometime get on here. And I was telling him about all the stuff we talk about. And Pat doesn't download stuff. He's not really that versed. I mean, he spends all day long on a computer. So coming home playing with a computer isn't really how he wants to spend his time.
Well, he didn't even have email till what, like 3-4 years ago?
Well, he had it at work. He just didn't have a personal email. And, you know, I know people like that.
I can't comprehend. I had a personal email in 1985.
Well, my wife's like that. I mean, she spends every day on the computer. So, I mean, to me, like, honey, come here, check this out on the computer, is the last thing she wants to do when she gets home. Whereas my job has nothing to do with computers, so... You know, me spend all day long on Castle Age on a snowy, dreary day in Minneapolis? Sure, why not? So, anyways, so come join us if you're in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area at noon. We'll be there.
If you're not in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, just drive on in.
Sure.
And get on a plane.
If not, go find yourself a comic book store. Get yourself a heaping, helping batch of free comics.
And it is international.
Yes. So
there are comic shops all over the world taking part.
Not to mention, if you don't want to see us, then you can see Corey and I at the SpringCon Comic Book Carnival, May 18th and 19th, 2013, which is right around the corner.
They'll have fortune tellers.
And they'll be at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds.
They'll have unicyclists.
They'll have 1,000 square feet of comic book action with dealers from all over Sector 2814.
They'll have juggling bears.
They'll have free grab bags for the first 500 people in on Saturday, and then 250 for the first 250 people in on Sunday.
They'll have creepy carny guys who are missing a lot of teeth who put together the rides, and you're scared to get on them because you don't think they know how to use a wrench.
Plus, there will be over 500 door prizes and special giveaways. So wander around the con, check it out. Go right to the prize booth table, which is right behind the entrance. Put your name in the magic jug, and you don't even have to be there to win. They'll mail things to you.
Magic jug. There's only one magic jug that I know of, and that's Christina Hendricks's. Thank you.
Oh, if she was there. Oof.
Crickets enjoy that one.
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, tickets will be at the door. $12 for both days. Children 9 and under free. Get $1 off with a food shelf donation. The dealer list, the guest list is up at MidwestComicBook.com. That's MidwestComicBook.com. It's 25 years of MCBA comic book action. And, of course, the highlight of the show will be the charity art auction on Sunday.
Joe.
And, of course, Corey and I will be right next to it at the charity rummage sale / charity booth.
Joe.
Are you back?
The highlight of the show will be the panel that you and I do about comic book podcasting.
When were you going to tell me about this?
I've been telling you for the past
4 episodes. I've got things I've got to do. There's new universe to fill. Ultraverse. I got to get out there and get those copies of this, mate.
He's going to puke. He's going to puke.
Oh, one of these days I'll learn not to eat before potting. So you're telling me I'm going to waste not only an hour of my life recording now, but I'm going to have to do it at the con too?
Yes.
Neat.
We may have questioners in the audience.
I doubt that.
And I sent an email to Nick a while back saying if there are any other comic book podcasters who want to join us, let us know. And
yes.
As is tradition,
we'll ignore.
We won't hear from Nick until the Friday before the con.
Yeah.
But I'm planning all kinds of stuff. I'm trying to talk the crickets into coming. They don't know. If the weather's still like this, they don't want to go outside.
Fairground's a big place. I don't think I would want crickets.
Maybe we could get you to show off copies of Deathmate.
That ain't going to happen.
See if you can hold your lunch as I give you Deathmate Red.
I can have that one because that one we got the return.
We'll do Tales from the Shop live.
Oh,
there'll be none of that.
I hope not.
Because we don't want the audience to get never mind. We'll do all kinds of stuff. We may even have special guests.
Mm-hmm. And if we're lucky, we can record it, and that'll take care of that week's podcast.
Well, for the Cray and Crazy Comics podcast, yeah. But the solo podcast, I may talk about the forming of the MCBA.
That would be good, because I wasn't even there for it.
Because I was there.
Maybe we'll get into that as we get closer to where we have our pre-con extravaganza.
The pre-con extravaganza where we tell you what you should and should not bring to a convention.
Yes. Or maybe.
And talk about what it's like at a shop getting ready for a convention.
You know what we could do? We could just dig up the old ones and just rerun them.
You know, there are other podcasts that are rerunning their old episodes. And I don't know if I like that. Because I don't watch reruns on TV. And for me, when somebody says, well, I'm rerunning this podcast from blah, blah, blah. Well, they're all online. Why don't you just say, by the way, why don't you go and listen to episode 19? Rather than, I'm going to repost episode 19 because I'm just kind of lazy and don't want to record a new episode this week. But I want the feed to have something new.
Yes.
Speaking of podcasts.
Release the Kraken.
Ladies. Just so you know, if you're on a date and the guy you're with kind of reaches down, grabs his belt and says, release the Kraken, you should probably go home right there.
Yep, yep. What's a trouser snake?
Speaking of podcasts,
mm-hmm.
Joe, you're probably not listening to This Week in Marvel, Marvel's official podcast.
Negative.
They are doing this wonderful side podcast. They do one a week where it's, okay, here's everything that's coming out. Here's all the movie and TV news. Here's the video game news. They answer questions sent to them on Twitter. But then they have 0.5 podcasts, which come out in between. And what they've been doing a special podcast for each episode of Age of Ultron with the editors involved. And once again, they take questions via Twitter. And I am having a blast listening to it. You read the comic, then you listen to the episode and you find out what is it? They've been, the art for Age of Ultron was actually started over 3 years ago. And the first mentions of the story were at the beginning of the Heroic Age. So that thing's been in the works since 2009.
Which is how they should really be doing it. I mean, there's no reason they couldn't have this stuff, you know, linked into some grand tapestry as opposed to, you know, changing artists and writers every other day.
Well, one of the reasons that they did start it so early at Brian Hitch, really slow.
But worth it.
But I'm enjoying it.
I am too.
But we're not at freaking and geeking.
Nope.
So Joe, Tales from the Shop. What do you got for us for Tales from the Shop?
I got nothing.
Nothing?
Nope.
That's one of the most popular segments on the show. People love when we talk about our old days working in comic shops and you were there for how many years?
Nothing. Nothing. Got nothing.
How many years were you and you've got nothing?
Nothing. Not a thing.
Okay, obscure characters. There's always an obscure character. I've been reading some Golden Age Marvel, and so I'll let you start. Joe, what obscure character?
Nothing. Got nothing. Can't think of anybody.
God, it's like the early episodes where you didn't do any prep work and you didn't read the format. Nothing. Oh, I know. The Great Comic Resort of 2013. That's a new feature, but I'm enjoying it because we're talking about, you know, kind of obscure series from the past, and Tales from the Shop kind of flow out of it, and it brings back a warm nostalgic glow. And so Joe, tell me about the box you've been working on.
I have not worked on a box since we talked last.
Really?
You know, I mean, I've got it here, I just haven't opened it.
Really?
Yep.
I may have to go back and pull some. Oh, I know. I'll go back to one of our earliest segments that we used to do. Joe, are y'all caught up on Spider-Man? Let's talk Spider-Man.
No.
You're not caught up on Spider-Man.
Well, I am. I just don't want to talk about it. Because, I mean, we've been geeking and freaking on that one, so I got nothing. Nothing.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
Yep.
Shortest episode ever.
Yep.
So you've got nothing.
I got nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
I did power up on, you know, I do know that this here podcast has sponsors.
Why, yes, it does. And here's our sponsor, DreamHost.com. This here podcast is sponsored by DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best bar none web host in the whole known universe. I know because I've been using it for over 12 years. Anytime I've had a problem, they've been able to help me fix it. And let's face it, I'm not that bright when it comes to fixing crap that's wrong on my computer or anybody else's computer or the internet. DreamHost.com. They have a discount. That's right. If you go to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, you get $20 off your first year of web hosting. Now, the beautiful thing about DreamHost.com is you can set up whatever you want. They have downloadable software for you to set up a WordPress blog, like we use for the podcast. You can also use a WordPress blog to start a web strip, to start a blog, to do any sort of thing you want. If you want to do a store, they have software for that, and they will help you get it set up. They're actually having a convention later this year where you can meet the people who run DreamHost and other people who have websites at DreamHost. DreamHost.com, the best damn web host in the whole known universe. And in there, it also tells you how to contact us. Yeah. So We love getting the feedback.
Oh yeah, because that will take up at least 20 minutes podcast time because we're so happy. Because even with the last podcast, I was telling Corey, I got some guys at work that, unbeknownst to me, downloaded and listened to it. So that was kind of cool.
Oh, what they like?
Well, they want to know where they can get some of that soda. So the next time they have a drug test here, they do the same thing you did.
I got a couple people, well, one of our Facebook friends said that I was channeling my inner Lewis Black when I was talking about the new universe.
So the highlight of the last several podcasts was Corey's urination. And you wonder why I got nothing.
Gosh, I don't even know what they used to do on WrestleCrap Radio when they didn't have anything for their segments. Usually the phone would ring and it would be one of their characters, but you won't let me create any characters for the show.
I don't think people use phones anymore.
Hold on. You know whose birthday it was a few weeks ago?
Your roommate's?
No.
I mean, she didn't re-mess up her room, did she?
We'll talk later.
Oh, okay, we'll talk later. She must.
Well, you had a birthday.
She's probably in the room. No, mine's in February, so that was a while ago. You had a birthday.
No, mine's in August.
Oh.
I know who had a birthday.
Who's that?
The Big Blue Boy Scout.
The Blue Man Group?
No. The man who stands for truth, justice in the American way.
Corey, Ronald Reagan's dead.
The last son of Krypton.
Phil Collins?
Superman!
Oh, Superman! Oh.
I thought we should discuss and celebrate Superman's 75th anniversary. And just think, Joe, the fact that we've talked about Superman's 75th anniversary for 2 to 3 minutes, you know what that means?
We probably talked more about it than Time Warner has.
Yeah, we've done more to celebrate Superman's birthday than DC Comics did. Because the 50th anniversary, they had a cover of Time magazine, they did the big revamp with John Byrne, they put out the greatest Superman stories ever told, which was the first real collection like that. They started the Superman Archives, which reprinted the Superman stories from the first one on. And DC, well, let's see, the Grant Morrison run on Action Comics ended. And,
yes.
Well, there is a movie coming out this summer, but they're not tying it in with his 75th anniversary.
Nope. Superman, faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall, busty redheads in a single bound. Look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. Oh, right in my eye.
It's a frog.
It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman, strange visitor from another planet, who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands, and who disguises Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way. And now, another exciting episode in The Adventures of Superman.
So, Joe?
Yeah?
Do you remember the first Superman comic you ever read?
You know, I'm not sure. It's a tie. And I don't even remember the actual issues, but I do recall the reason I bought it. It was not necessarily because of Superman. It was because of Krypto.
The Superdog.
For some reason, in the 70s, they didn't really have Superdog in many comics. So when he showed up, it was kind of fun. The first one I remember, I was on vacation with my family, and we were in a store, and it actually had the typical spinner rack filled with comics. And I narrowed it down to two comics. The first was the Kiss Super Special. And the second one was an Adventures of Superman. Superman Family. That's what it was called. Because I remember the cover had Jimmy Olsen wearing some type of power boot and doing a drop kick on Superman you wouldn't believe. But I picked it up because in the back it had a Krypto story. And it had a Supergirl story, and it had some other stories, but that was the reason I picked it. So it was a choice between Kiss Super Special, which my mom wasn't thrilled with, because, you know, Kiss was demonic, and the Superman Family. So I picked up the Superman Family.
Well, one thing, Superman Family, as a kid, I thought, that's the dumbest title for a comic book I've ever heard of. And now I understand that DC used the term to describe the Superman Family of books. And it was, they were taking all the books that weren't selling real well and squishing them all together into one. But still, that's a stupid name for a comic series.
Well, I thought, yeah, and you know, the thing was, too, it was only a buck. And it was a lot of reading for a buck. And the Kiss Super Special was, what, $2.99? So obviously...
Nope, it was $1.50.
Really? Well, my folks, you know, they wanted me to be cheap and buy the buck. The second comic I remember of Superman was at an old, typical department store called Murphy's. Used to be in Frogtown in the... It was kind of like Snelling and University, if anybody can figure out where that is in the Twin Cities. And it was... A department store like you'd think of in the old times. You go in, they had everything. They had a beautiful toy aisle, which I'd walk up and down for ages. And they had a stand up front with magazines and tons of comic books. The comic book I picked up, I remember, had a story about some clown guy who would get a massive migraine whenever Superman was around. So he plotted to send him back in time. And the last thing you see is Clark Kent in the colonial days running off to talk to Ben Franklin or something. But the backup story...
Who was sleeping with Clea from Doctor Strange at the time.
That came later when Prez started doing JLA Avengers crossover.
Oh, okay.
But the backup story, again, had Crypto the Superdog in it. And it was a fairly interesting story because it had... First of all, the artist drew it like Crypto was a real dog. You know, not with human features or cartoon eyes. And the story was this guy using recording he had of Superman summoned Crypto down to Earth, which kind of torqued Crypto off because he thought it was Superman calling him down, you know, with the ultrasonic whistle only Superdog could hear. Elitists. Anyways, he wanted Superdog to do a commercial, and of course Superdog had wanted nothing to do with it until he said, well, the proceeds would go to orphan dogs. And so Crypto agreed, and as they're busy filming the commercial, Crypto eats the dog can. And the sponsor of the commercial was like, what? What's he doing then? He goes, oh, that was part of the marketing that the dogs will like the food so much they'll want to eat the can. I'll go talk to Crypto. Go, Crypto, you almost blew it. You know, you got to eat the food. And Crypto just goes down, he eats the food, and he's thinking, ah, the can tastes better. So I bought that one. And as you know, we talked about this was back in the newsstand. The cover of the comic was actually ripped off, and somebody had drawn 25 cents on the top of it. And what that means is they ripped the cover off, sent it back for credit, and then left the comic out for some schlub like me to buy it. I thought at first, oh, geez, I'm only getting half a cover, but I really like the Crypto story, so I bought it. And I don't have either of those issues anywhere. I mean, I didn't find the second part of the Superman story until late 80s when I started hanging at comic book shops. That was always something I did back before I started going to comic book shops. I would always open a comic, look at it. If it said to be continued, I'd put it back because I knew I would never, ever find the second or third or whatever part of the story. And even when I started going to comic book shops, again, Twin City Comics, Greg Kader, damn fine, handsome man.
A damn handsome man.
He is. His first comic store, Dale Front and Como, in the middle of the Twin Cities. And no relation to the current Twin City Comics. But when I started going to his store, I always felt I should be reading Superman comics. I don't know where or how I was aware of Superman. I suspect it was from the old Dynamite magazines, if you remember those. Back in the earlier issues, the first issue I bought of Dynamite had like Herbie the Love Bug on the cover, but inside they had a 3-page feature where there were 2 pages reprinted from the hero's origin and then a page of questions and answers. And the one number four with Herbie was Spider-Man. But I know I went back and I picked up the other three eventually. And of course, number one, I think, was Superman. Then they did Batman, Wonder Woman. So I was aware of his origin. I was aware he was around from the 1930s. I remember trying to convince my mom to borrow me $50 when comic books were 25 cents to buy a copy of Action Comics number one. I think it was from Mile High, one of their ads. she didn't, and I don't have one. And I always felt bad that I didn't read Superman comics, because I always knew it was because of Superman we had everybody. But the problem is they just weren't that good. You know,
no.
Especially when, compared to what Marvel was doing at the time. I mean, this was, remember, John Byrne's X-Men, and, you know, for me it was Spider-Man 178. He was fighting what I didn't realize at the time was the third Green Goblin. And so it was a tough sell. I mean, I didn't find out how good Superman stories could be until the Digest came on. They started doing the best of Superman stories. What was your first Superman experience, I guess?
Well, I knew Superman from the cartoons. And even as a kid, I watched Super Friends. The real Super Friends with Wendy and Marvin and what was the whatever the dog's name was. All this Jan and Jace stuff. Yeah. Bah.
Humbug. Yeah.
But when I was a little kid, I liked Harvey. Really liked the Harvey stuff. Richie Rich. Little Dot. Casper was okay, but I like Spooky the Tough Little Ghost better.
I liked Hot Stuff.
Hot Stuff was good, but boy, they were hard to find.
Little Lulu was good. I always liked them. See, and that's the thing. I would do like you did. I would buy Archie. I would buy Uncle Scrooge, definitely.
Yep, any of the Disney Duck books were top of the list. I had to get those.
And the difference was I was reading comics. I wasn't collecting them yet. That didn't happen, like I said, until I got that Spider-Man book.
But I've talked in the past how, you know, the superhero stuff, I didn't like it because of the art. The art, I was an overly sensitive kid.
Wonder Dog was the name of...
that's right, Wonder Dog. So superhero books, I didn't read because the art kind of scared me. It was darker. And I don't know why. The art was darker. But I remember my grandmother had a Superman comic. And it was Superman versus the Abominable Snowman. You won't believe the secret of the Abominable Snowman.
Did you?
I believed it.
Ah.
He was an alien. And the way Superman fought him, and then, you know, much like a Marvel book, which I would read later on, it was just a misunderstanding. He wasn't really a monster. He was an alien who was trapped here on Earth. And what Superman did, for some reason, if the Abominable Snowman was not making contact with the ground, he would slip into a coma. And then Superman got this device, and he was floating off the ground for like a foot. And Superman figured out a way to send him back to his home planet, the end. And it was just dull. And I don't know if I was reading Marvel at the time yet or not. The only reason I read this book was because I was at my grandmother's, and it was winter, and it was nothing on TV, and the grown-ups were all talking, and the teenagers were all away doing something. So it was just me and my three younger sisters who were my two younger sisters. My youngest sister wasn't born yet, and they were playing with dolls. So it's, oh my God, I've already read all of Uncle Tim's Mad magazines 100,000 times, and they're all they're so old. They're 2 or 3 years old. And that was the only thing left. So I read it, and it did not make that big of an impression on me. It was more, this is dull. And I was a Marvel zombie after that, but I remember even when I started picking up DC books with New Teen Titans and Batman, I didn't pick up Superman till Marv Wolfman and Gil Kane were doing it.
Was that when his powers got split in two?
No, that was way back. Wolfman came on, I would say, about 83, 84. And then they did, and because it was Julie Schwartz, it wasn't they're doing the book. It's, oh, they've got an issue. Oh, now somebody else has an issue. Now somebody else has an issue. But it all led up to, I think it was the 45th anniversary of Action Comics, which had the new Brainiac.
I remember that.
And the Luther in the battle suit.
Mm-hmm.
And the Luther in the battle suit was really cool looking. And I think both of them were designed by George Perez. But even though the Superman where Luther got the battle suit, that story was still kind of stupid. Because what it was, Lex Luthor had a planet where he was the hero. And he got tired of being thrown in jail all the time by Superman. So he goes, I'm just going to go live on, I think it was Lexor. And while he was there, he figured out this way to use the planet's core to create free power for everyone. And Superman was coming to get him and bring him back to prison. And Luthor said, no, here, I'm a hero. I'm not bothering anybody. You should just leave me alone. And Superman looked over his power device and said, there's a flaw in it, and it's going to cause a problem. Luthor said, no, it's not. You just don't want me to be happy. And there was a flaw in it, and it caused Lexor to explode, killing Lex Luthor's wife and child.
I remember interviews about that because they were saying the idea that years later he was still mad because he blamed Superboy for losing his hair was pretty stupid.
Yes.
And they wanted to give Lex more of a reason to hate Superman.
And it worked in that way, and it made Luthor a character who could go toe-to-toe with Superman because they were trying to Marvelize DC leading into Crisis on Infinite Earths, and there really wasn't anybody who could, you know, go toe-to-toe, fist-to-fist with Superman because they'd built Superman up to, you know, he was so powerful he could move planets and all this stuff, so, you know, Superman punches anybody in the face, they're dead. But I thought they were decent enough stories. But then I really liked when John Byrne came on. And I look back now and there are some decisions that they made that I don't agree with. But they really Marvelized Superman. Byrne did some okay stories. And then he did what he tends to always do. He got mad at DC and left in a huff in the middle of a story, where he'd had Superman kill people. And the creative team that picked up after that, that was my favorite era of Superman. From the execution of the Phantom Zone villains until the death of Superman is probably my favorite Superman run.
Cracked Magazine lists an article about superhero sex as one of the creepiest ones is when, I don't know who it was Gad. Big Barda and Superman basically,
yes,
recording porn.
Yes. Thanks, John Byrne.
Yeah.
John Byrne, who says, I respect the characters, mm-hmm, when I come on them. I respect what previous creators did. I don't think Jack Kirby would have had Big Barda doing porn.
Well,
somehow I really don't think.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But
boom, chicka, brown, chicken, brown cow.
One thing about Superman, and I was having this discussion on the Comic Geek Speak board, if you say what are the great Superman stories, there really aren't a lot. You know, there are good, there are decent, there are ones that are okay. But with Batman, it's what are the best Batman stories? You can name off 10 to 20 right off the top of your head. With Superman, it's harder.
Mm-hmm.
With me, it's Grant Morrison's All-Star Superman, which is my favorite Superman story, period, end of statement. The Alan Moore's finale to the Silver Age Superman, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow. Alan Moore's Superman Annual for the Man Who Has Everything. And then I don't remember the issue number, but they've actually turned it into an animated movie, and the title of it was What's So Funny About Truth, Justice, and the American Way, where Superman meets the elite, who say, well, you're Superman. If there's a bad guy, why don't you just kill him?
Mm-hmm.
And it goes into why Superman doesn't kill, why Superman doesn't just change the world to, you know, change the world to be a utopia. It's really good. But other than that, if you say, you know, great Superman stories, I kind of draw a blank, which is sad because Superman is such an iconic character. I think every child, at least here in the U.S., they're born knowing who Batman is, who Superman is, who Spider-Man is, and who Mickey Mouse is.
Yeah.
Joe, what are your favorite Superman stories?
See, a lot of my Superman stories, I don't recall the issues because a lot of them were pre-crisis. There was one where I forget, there was somebody, I don't know what it was, but he was being held hostage and Superman was trying his darndest to find him. And what he had done is he decided to go on to the, oh, I know what it was. It was a like a Johnny Carson type guy on whatever station.
Oh yeah, they
Morgan worked for
Johnny Nevada.
Yep, yep. So he was kidnapped.
Had him show up a number of times.
Steve, the sports announcer, what was his name? Lombardi?
Yeah.
He was hosting the show, and it apparently was live. And Clark Kent was supposed to be one of the guests. And, of course, when Clark showed up, Steve was going to, you know, razz him the way he always does. Well, then Superman shows up because he'd been spending the entire story trying to find where – the host was being held, because basically if they didn't get the ransom by the end of the show, they were going to kill him. Superman gets on and Steve's like, oh, this is quite a honor. What do we have to do here? And he says, well, let me show you something. He basically tears off his mask and it's the host of the show. He's saying, yeah, me and Superman switched places for a day. He gave me some devices to let me fly and stuff. And meanwhile, back at the bad guy's hideout, go, wait a minute, does that mean we've had Superman the entire time? How come he hasn't broken out? Well, let's find out. And click, Superman hears that. Blitzes out of the studio and about in a four-panel page proving once and for all he is faster than a speeding bullet, shows up, catches the bullets, knocks out the villain, and takes off. And then, of course, back in the studio, Lombardi calls for Clark Kent. Clark hasn't showed up, and now the goose eggs on him because he now has 15 minutes to fill with no guests. There was a story which I think was where Superman ended up stranded in the future under a red sun and had to figure out his way back home. And there was nobody on Earth. There was nobody around. There were robots left behind to honor Superman and his legacy. And the robotic Jimmy Olsen gave him all the information. Again, I read this in a Superman's Digest. I think the best parts about Superman I liked, and this would probably be something I would do if I were to be the writer. Superman outside the Superman books is Superman. He's the guy, when he shows up, you go, okay, things are going to work out. He's the badass. Even though you might treat him like a Boy Scout. Grant Morrison had wonderful scenes with him in Justice League, you know, when he was being held by the Red Martians and he looks up and he says, you don't realize you haven't, Batman's the most dangerous human being on the planet. And Superman, even though he's being, bombarded by hallucinations and whatever, he just turns his eyes glow red and boom, he blows something up next to him, you know, to escape. But in the Superman book, that's when you can concentrate more on the man. You know, how does it feel to be a guy who could change the river or change courses, of history, you know? I think one of the crossovers where Superman was, the Swamp Thing was trying to get to Luthor because of what Luthor had did to him. He apparently made a gun that shot him out. And, you know, however Swamp Thing tried to get into the city, Superman would thwart him. You know, he's just a little tiny spore floating on the air, and you see him floating towards Metropolis, and you see Superman flying in and his hand coming, getting ready to grab him, and poof, he disappears to try again. And when Swamp Thing finally does get there and questions him, why are you protecting these people when they're obviously such scum? Superman's like, I love them. He loves the human race. That's why he does what he's doing. To finish my rambling rant, the one other Superman story that really stuck with me was the novelization that came out when Superman the movie came out. The novel had nothing to do with the movie, and I think, was it Elliot that wrote it?
Yep, Elliot S. Magan.
And that was an awesome Superman story, and it basically dealt with Superman stopping Armageddon and what he had to do. You know, he would catch a few missiles and throw them out. He would gulp down a couple pounds of hot plutonium. He would get his brain, so the left half of the brain would operate while the right side was sleeping, and then he would reverse that. He basically went 24 hours nonstop, stopping World War III and the total destruction. Again, I don't know nothing else about the story. It was just that those concepts were just mind-blowing. And you could probably find the book cheap on eBay, but if you really want to read a good Superman story, that would be one to pick up.
I remember reading that book when the movie came out, and at first it was, oh, I thought this was a novelization of the movie, because it had the picture of Christopher Reeve, and it had 8 photos from the movie inside.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm reading it, and it's, well, this isn't the movie, but I wasn't a DC person at the time, and I remember reading it going, well, this is kind of cool.
Yeah,
this
was good.
This is kind of interesting. And I remember I did see the Superman movie when it came out. And
I did not.
That first Superman movie is still just one of the best superhero movies ever.
Yep.
And I actually just listened to a podcast with Kevin Smith and Jeff Johns. And Jeff Johns' first, like, job in entertainment was as Richard Donner's intern slash gopher slash assistant, where he talked about working with Richard Donner and asking about all these scenes that were taken out of the movie. And just hearing about how the movie was made. And especially when you look at the screen, when you watch Superman the movie, you'll say it's a screenplay by Mario Puzo. And I forget the credit Tom Mankiewicz had. But it's pretty much an open secret that Puzo's script was unbelievably terrible. Utter piece of shit. And Mankiewicz completely rewrote it. And even though Superman 2 isn't as good as I remembered it, and I know why, because Richard Lester's kind of made it more campy, I still remember going to the theater to see Superman 2 and coming out going, that was fantastic, because it was a superhero fight scene in a movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I keep wondering why it's so hard to do good Superman stories. You know, a lot of people say, well, you know, he's ultimately powerful and you can't really have an adversary for him. And yet when Grant Morrison did All-Star Superman, because this guy is ultimately powerful, he can have the most, you know, the biggest, most interesting adventures.
You know, and that's really what they should do. I mean, the Marvel movies borrow liberally from the comic books, and they adapt the stories to motion pictures. I don't understand why they can't do that with Warner Brothers, and maybe they can. We'll find out this summer, because I know so far I'm geeking just looking at the previews.
Yep, Man of Steel does look pretty good, and it's the director's also the director who did 300. Oh, what other movie has he done recently that I really liked? I can't think off the top of my head, but 300, you know, also a comic book adaptation, just a beautiful movie to look at. So I have high hopes for that. The Superman comics in a bit of flux right now. Grant Morrison's done with his Action Comics run, which was good, but not great. And I think it's because they had to set up all the stuff that for the DC 52, but the regular Superman comic, boy, the Perez issues weren't that good, and none of the books after that have been very good. So hopefully, soon, DC could kind of figure out, okay, here's who we're going to put on the book. Now, Superman
I've got,
book.
I've got Superman trivia for you.
Well, I was going to ask you something first. There's another Superman series that I'm not reading, but I'm betting you did. So, Joe, how was Superman Earth 1?
I enjoyed it. It doesn't tie in, I believe, to 52, which is helpful.
It's its own little thing.
And I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good beginning. I've got the second book I haven't read yet. I suppose I could read that since I'm not buying new comics today.
There you go.
So, but I enjoyed it. And if you want, I'll borrow it to you. Okay. However, you have to bring back the deluxe comic of the Monsters of Evil, because I would like to read. I would like to read that.
Well, actually, when I am bringing you a comic when I come over for Free Comic Book Day. Ooh. For us to run around with.
Cool.
Image United number one.
That beat that dead horse.
Well, Image finally has announced that.
Don't wait for it. Don't worry about it. Do you know why Superman wore red tights on the outside of his uniform?
The explanation I always heard is it was based on a circus performer's uniform.
Yep, that's what I heard. Because in the 30s, if you saw somebody wearing that, you knew instantly that's a strong person. And it was something that just kind of lost its meaning over time. And of course now, because of the whole litigation with Superman, they made him so now he just has a red belt, not really a red, the iconic uniform.
Although that litigation did conclude, and basically DC won.
And I'm also, you know, I keep thinking, like we were talking about, why I don't like the current Superman. And I don't know if it's because no matter who drew Superman from the 70s up until the 52, he was drawn like a man. The current Superman looks more like a Superboy. He doesn't really look like a man. The few issues I try reading, he's not acting like a man. Even in Justice League, I mean, it's like, oh, this is the most powerful man on the planet. I don't buy it yet. You know, just because he's called Superman, I'm not buying that he is Superman. And I don't know if it's because the costume or it's because they insist on having him with, you know, long Tom Cruise type Don Johnson hair or something. I'm not buying it.
For me, it's the stories just aren't interesting and they've lost. One of the things I feel is at the core of Superman, and I've heard a lot of comic creators over the years talk about different aspects of Superman, and each writer chooses which aspect. For me, it's Superman as the wish fulfillment character. When you read Superman, it's, oh, wouldn't it be cool if I could fly? Wouldn't it be cool if I could do this? Wouldn't it be cool if I could do that? Mm. But the identification part is that Superman disguised as Clark Kent. It's not Clark Kent puts on a costume and becomes Superman. It's Superman is disguised as Clark Kent. And Clark Kent, Lois Lane won't give him the time of day because she's in love with Superman. And it's that teenagery feel of, you know what? If she really knew who I was, she'd love me. Mm. And I think they really need to tap into that core that reaches to, you know, if people really knew who I was, they'd like me. If people really took the time, you know, because there are a number of different aspects you can use with Superman. Julie Schwartz always liked to go to he's the last son of Krypton. He's the last survivor of this fantastical race. And there's a sadness to that he knows, even though he survived, he's the last of his kind. Which got diluted over the years by adding the dog and the monkey and the horse and Supergirl and the Phantom Zone villains and all these other things. But they always came back to that core of he's the last one. Other people, Grant Morrison liked to touch on, he's the most scientifically advanced character, so you could give him super science fiction adventures where anything can happen. And Superman is unflappable. He can deal with it. He can understand it. That's a fun aspect as well. Alan Moore tapped into that too, with Superman is kind of your dad. You know, he's kind of a dad figure who goes off and does these wonderful, cool things, but he's still, you know, just a white suburban guy. But each writer needs to find a core for Batman for their stories to work. Some of the other stories I've really liked, I liked the Mark Waid Superman Birthright, where he kind of took John Byrne's Man of Steel and said, yeah, you know all those cool Silver Age things that you threw out, I'm bringing them all back. I go back now and I can see why Byrne's Superman needed to be done, but I think there was a lot of unnecessary stuff that was kind of shoehorned in there. And I'm glad that when he left the book, a lot of the creators just kind of ignored it. The other thing that happened with the 90s with Superman is they kind of fulfilled all the stuff that was going on. Okay, Lois Lane did finally find out that Superman is Clark Kent. Mm-hmm. They got married.
Well, I did talk about an earlier pre-crisis story about that.
Yep.
You know, where it was tied into a Superboy story where Pa Kent came back and he was talking to Lois about, you know, she kind of alluded to the fact, like, yeah, she knows. She just doesn't waste her time looking for it anymore, you know?
Yeah.
I always like Ambush Bug when Clark Kent walked in on him. And he goes, wait a minute. And he jumps up. You're Superman. No, no, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, hang on. I got to go. I'll be back. And Ambush Bug's thinking, he's not going to come back. So he jumps on him, rips his coat and hat off, pulls his glasses off, licks his thumb, gives him a cow curl, and he goes, and he lands on his back laughing. Ah, I can't believe that worked. That's so stupid. I think those are available in didn't they do a showcase with Ambush Bug?
Yes, they did an Ambush Bug showcase, which had everything except the last mini series. And that's one that I keep in the bookshelf by my bed because every so often it's, you know, I need to read me some Ambush Bug. Uh-oh.
What?
Joe, do you hear that?
No, I don't.
Sad news, everyone.
Aww.
The sad news music is out.
I don't have any sad news.
I do.
Aww.
You know how the Peter David's X Factor, they're soliciting the end of X Factor story. It is the end of X Factor. X Factor has been canceled.
Did they say why?
Low sales. And if you go over to Marvel.com, Peter David talks about how, you know, the book's being canceled. He's writing a wrap-up story. And you hear crying in the background. And at the end of the video, it's his daughter. He's, why are they canceling X-Factor? It's really funny.
Oh,
it's
Lord.
Really cool. He said not to worry. He's got plenty of work coming out from Marvel. Actually, in the latest issue of X-Factor, in the recap page, one of the things they said is, Peter David didn't write this recap, but don't worry, he's here in the office working over some big plans for this, for these characters in this series over the next few months and years. So what I'm thinking is probably going to happen is probably going to cancel it, reconfigure it, and kind of carry on with some of the characters or starting over with a new number one or... But I liked X Factor. And it's had a really good run for kind of a book that doesn't have any star characters.
Yeah.
Peter David came back to it in 2004 with the Madrox miniseries.
I've enjoyed it. And it's still $2.99, so it stayed on my list. Peter David's one of the guys, when he writes something, I'll actually go out of my way looking at it.
So, any other things before we get to geeking and freaking, or freaking and geeking, whatever we're calling it?
Oh. Not really.
You're supposed to set me up for hanging at the home.
Oh, no, I got nothing for hanging at the home.
You're so bad at this co-host thing.
Yeah.
You're supposed to ask me about hanging at the home. You don't work in a group. No.
Oh, Corey, have you been hanging at the home?
Why, yes, I have, Joe.
Okay, what's next?
You know how I said the company got bought up by a new company?
Yes.
And we all had to reapply for our jobs.
Disney's not didn't buy them up, did they?
No.
See, that would work, because if Disney bought these places up, they could make these people just force watch Disney all day long, and it would make their ratings go up.
They actually, the group home that I spend most of my time working in, they watch Channel 4. It doesn't matter what's on Channel 4. You turn on the TV, you ask them what they want to watch, and they'll say, Channel 4.
Channel 4.
Doesn't matter if it's a talk show or a CSI or whatever, they watch Channel 4.
Mm-hmm.
And that fascinates me. Although there are a couple residents who, if I sneak and turn on Animal Planet, they'll watch that. But you got to be careful with Animal Planet now. Because Animal Planet, they have cute animal stuff until a certain point of the day when it becomes when animals eat people or when dogs try to kill their owners.
When ferrets make love to your shoe.
Yeah. So you got to be careful when turning on the Animal Planet. It may go from Dog 101 where, oh, look at these cute puppies, and here's what a beagle puppy is like, and if you should own one, to my cat tried to kill me. With the scary music and the black of the picture turns to black and white.
That's what I love.
And the cat claws are coming at the camera.
It's the same stock footage over and over.
But we had to reapply for our jobs, which, you know, that's a little degrading.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had to re-interview for my job, which is really degrading.
So, Mr. Strode, why should we hire you as opposed to this 5-pound bucket of flan?
So, because I work overnights, I signed up for the latest interview possible. And they call me Friday and go, we need to move your interview time. Oh, really? Yeah, I know you work overnights, but we don't have anybody who's going to be interviewed from like 5 o'clock till 8 o'clock, and we don't want to just sit around here at the office for 3 hours. So we've moved you to, I think it was like Wednesday at noon. And I said, are there any other times? Because Wednesday at noon means I go home and I either stay up and I come in for the interview completely knackered or I go to sleep.
I'd like to see Corey completely knackered.
Or I come home, I go to sleep, I wake up, I do the interview, I come back, and maybe I get back to sleep. It's like waking up at 2 a.m. to go in for an interview. So they said, well, you know, we do, and they kept wanting to have me interview in the middle of the afternoon till finally they said, well, we do have some, 7:10 on Tuesday night.
Folks, in case you didn't catch it, Corey used something out of the Urban Dictionary, knackered. It's an adjective that is chiefly British in origin, meaning very tired or exhausted. The word does not imply sexual exhaustion. Continue, Corey.
Well, of course the word doesn't apply sexual exhaustion.
Imply, sorry.
Imply. Yeah. So last night, we're recording this on Wednesday, it'll be going up on Friday. Last night I had my interview, and there are a few other people there for the interview, including our HR person. Our HR person is in, I am not joking, I am not making this up, a purple velour tracksuit. And the other person who's interviewing is wearing a sweatshirt and jeans. Now, I'm interviewing with one of my current supervisors. She is at least dressed reasonably professional. She's got imagine a middle-aged woman who's dressed up to go to Target and not Walmart.
That'd be my wife tonight.
And that's how she was dressed. Me, it's a job interview. And Joe, what is my nickname?
The best dressed man in comics.
I'm wearing, you know, a shirt with French cuffs, matching tie, vest, dress slacks. I didn't wear a blazer because half the people who've been going are, you know, they're going in t-shirts and jeans. But still, I walk in and I make an impression because the person from the company by is like, are you here for the right interview? And the person who, you know, is there is like, yeah, you didn't have to dress up. I said, this is a job interview. You dress up for a job interview. And it went well. They only asked one question that kind of felt like a trap.
It's a trap.
And it was, well, what do you think the company could do right now to make things better?
Give me a pay raise, free back rubs from, what's her name from Mad Men?
Christina Hendricks.
I just think of her as the redhead.
Joan. Her character's name is Joan on the show.
Joan.
Anyway, but one of the questions where I felt I had a wonderfully evasive answer. This is a Lutheran company that has bought us up. And they said, have you read the mission statement? I said, yes, I have. And I really agree with the client focused care. And I used it as a way to say one of the things that staff tend to forget, and it's good to be reminded of every so often, is this is not my workplace where the residents are. It's their house where I come into work. And we need to keep that in mind. You know, really good, you know, businessy answer. Well, one of the things in our mission statement is that we give Christ-centered care. What does that mean to you? And we've talked on the show.
Shut up.
I'm out. I'm an atheist.
Swear to God.
Swear to Pac-Man.
It could work.
So I get that question, and here's my answer, Joe.
Doink, doink.
Yo, I have a lot of experience working with teenagers in the juvenile justice system, and only about 2 to 3 years experience here. But a lot of the issues they go through psychologically are the same. So I, on the overnight, am usually dealing with a crisis, and I handle the crisis as a crisis to try to smooth everything out and return things to normal as fast as possible. And if clients have questions about spirituality and things like that, you really don't want to deal with that on the overnight. But you need to remember, you're not there for you, you're there for them. So if a client wants to talk about what they did in church and things like that, I'm perfectly willing to help them out with that and to help them talk to their pastor and, you know, and on and on and on until it was okay. I've danced around that question pretty good. And I must have done well because the person interviewing then gave, you know, their little speech about, yeah, we do need to remember that it's about the client, not about us. And, you know, we're not here to proselytize. We're here to support. So, I dodged two trap questions and,
Corey, I think you got to reward yourself. The next time you go to a movie theater, bring along a squirt bottle and realize how entertaining it will be to pretend to sneeze.
Now, here we are. It's May 1st. And what? We're expected to get 6 inches of rain, right? No, not 6 inches of rain. 6 inches of snow.
Snow.
You know what happens on May 3rd, Joe?
Iron Man.
The drive-in opens.
Yes. Make sure your windshield wipers are working.
Now, I do want to go to the drive-in. I probably won't go over the weekend, but I'll go the first night I have off, which is Thursday. Here's their lineup for their opening weekend, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Iron Man 3.
Mm.
G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra. And Olympus Has Fallen.
Ooh.
All for $8.50.
50 cents.
50 cents.
It seems like a lot. How about I just give you the 50 cents and we call it even? You're not going to be around next year anyways.
Freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
I got nothing.
You got nothing.
I am not freaking this week. How about you, Corey? What are you freaking on?
Well, I don't know if I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago.
You did.
But DC used to do a thing with comic book resources, kind of like what Marvel does every Friday, where people send in questions and the people ask the editors the questions to get answers. Marvel does it every week. DC was doing it once a month. And Marvel's was called, Axel in Charge, mm-hmm. which was – they started it with Cup of Joe.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when Axel Alonso became editor-in-chief, it became Axel in Charge. DC had, B&B, I think it was. Let me double-check here. Yeah, B&B. It was Bob Harris and Bobby Chase. And they were once a month. And they ended it in the middle of an interview because somebody asked a question that they didn't like, and the DC publicity person said, well, we're done here. And then they sent him an email saying, we will not be continuing this feature anymore. And there's other things out there. If you look around the internet, you can see where DC is telling comic websites and podcasts that if they say anything negative about DC, they will pull all support, to the point of creators who aren't exclusive to DC having to cancel podcast appearances because DC's editorial said, if you were to do a podcast with that person, you will no longer get work at this company. Kind of like how WWE tells their people, don't talk to anybody but us. But here's the thing that got me, and I was thinking about it as I was listening to the Marvel podcast. Marvel has an official podcast. They have letters pages where they answer tweeted questions, and they'll answer every question they get. Trust me. I've sent a couple, and I've heard some where it's like, wow, they have to be really diplomatic about that answer. They're going to be starting up some YouTube shows with some of the people who used to be on G4. They're going to, you know, do some YouTube shows. You have one of the top editors, Tom Brevoort. He's on Formspring, and he's going to be moving over to some other website where he answers every question he gets. And if it's an obnoxious question, he answers in a very snarky way. You have a lot of Marvel creators who answer questions from fans on Tumblr. Marvel in their podcast says, here's what's coming out this week. Here's what's coming out 2 weeks from now. Here's what's out digitally. Here's what just got added to Marvel Unlimited. And that's not counting all the work they do with the comic news websites. They've got all this stuff on social media. If you want to know what Marvel's coming out with this week, it's easy to find. DC doesn't do a podcast anymore. And the podcast they did was just recordings of panels at conventions. And they ended that. They don't do any of the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Really, they just, here's a press release, that's it. There's no way to go to their website or their social media site or anything else to see what's coming out that week. I have to find out what's coming out from DC by subscribing to the New Comic List, which DC doesn't even take part in. Diamond sends it out. Who's in charge of their PR?
Who knows?
Rupert the Stuffed Bear from Family Guy?
I think so. That's probably a pretty good guess.
You need to make it easy on us. You need to publicize your books. Marvel's doing a fantastic job of getting the news out there, getting people excited, making you feel. One of the things that made Marvel number one was Stan was really good about, come on, we're all in this together. We're all part of the Marvel Merry Marching Society or the Friends of Old Marvel. He made Marvel seem like a big, kind of a big club that you were invited into. And DC was more, here's your books, kids. Read them. Or not. We don't give a shit. Well, Marvel's kind of recapturing that, hey, it's one big club. Come on. Join us on Twitter. We all play Avengers Alliance. We're doing DDP yoga, and it's really cool. Come on. And if you think I'm joking, the Marvel podcast, they talk about doing the DDP yoga. We're all part of the big, we're all fans here. We're all fans of Marvel. Come on. Whereas DC, more and more, it's like, you fans need to shut up and take what we give you. You don't like the fact that Harley Quinn now looks like a cheap $20 hooker? Tough shit. Deal with it. We're smarter than you. We know what you like. You want Stephanie Brown back? Well, you're an idiot. Quit asking. You want Wally West back? Shut up. Quit asking. Leave us alone.
And they wonder why we don't. So what you're saying is we're never, ever going to have an interview with a DC artist or creator.
Not if they want to keep working at DC. The thing is, to me, it's a crowded market out there. There's a ton of books, and there are more coming out all the time.
Not to mention video games. I mean, what's the one out now? Injustice?
Yeah.
That looks pretty solid. Movies?
You know what? The people who work for the video game company have been really pumping Injustice. They've got Kevin Smith talking about it on all his podcasts. He and Jason Mewes did an ad for it.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
What do you hear about from DC? Crickets.
I didn't even know they had a miniseries out on it. My daughter was the one who found that. She's trying to find the whole thing.
And Marvel, the guys at Marvel are talking about Avengers Alliance on Facebook all the time. DC, hey, we've got this really cool game out. And I listened to the Kevin Smith podcast and I got excited about it. I've been reading DC books. They haven't said boo. They haven't done anything to publicize it. But think about it. You could dump a Batman and a Justice League book out on the market and it'll sell 100,000 copies. But their midline books are dropping like rocks, and their lower tier books are gone. Yeah, they're now when they introduce a new 52 book, what is it? Sword and Sorcery, already canceled. Not even 6 months old, it was canceled. I want DC to succeed because when they took out TV ads, I was happy. You're bringing in new people. The problem is they haven't done anything to keep them. And they're driving away the old fans. They're driving people away. They're making it harder and harder to know what's coming out. They don't do a good job of publicizing. If DC does well, that means the market gets bigger. They bring in more people. They bring in more people. That means more creators can do more stuff. It means more indie books are going to sell because you get more bodies in the door. Comic shops do better. Conventions do better. I really thought with Time Warner jumping in and taking a stronger hand in the company, it might be annoying to those of us who like the continuity that they'd build up and like that history, but it would bring in new people and that would counterbalance. Well, they've driven off all the people like you and me. You know, I'm not reading much DC. You say you're not reading much DC, and they're not bringing in new people and they're not hyping the stuff. It's here. Here's the book. We'll buy it. Well, why should I buy it? What's going on? Shut up and buy the book. Oh, the creator you like, they're probably not on the book anymore. I feel like I'm always bitching about DC.
And you are.
But this really is starting to bug me that even Dark Horse is doing more to publicize their books. Valiant is doing more to publicize their books. And DC seems to have this arrogance of, you're going to buy it. You know you are. So just shut up, quit bitching, and buy the book. And you can't live in a world like that anymore. It just doesn't work anymore. So that's what I'm freaking on. Joe, what you geeking on?
I got lots of geeking, and I'll just be quick because I'm having fun. I mean, my youngest daughter, Holly's reading comics voraciously. I even let her read Watchmen, and she really enjoyed it. Now I gotta do the same thing I did with Dana. I gotta line everything up again. I mean, she's got my absolute hush. She was gonna read Kingdom Come, but I told her wait off a little until you're a little more familiar with the DC universe.
Yep.
I'm gonna line up Sandman for her. I mean, she's read Bean World already. She just finished reading Mouse. So that's kind of fun. My wife's really digging Doctor Who. At least I think she is. I mean, I tried to get her to watch Babylon 5, and even I gotta admit, Babylon 5's hard because that first season is slow. But when you go back and you rewatch it, he drops so many clues that pay off later on. But with Doctor Who, she seems to be more willing to get into it. And she owes me because she made me watch X-Files. And,
hey, I liked X-Files.
To me, the ones I wanted to watch on X-Files were the conspiracy ones. The Monster of the Weeks were fine, but I was more into the conspiracy. And it was always like they always had a big conspiracy episode, and then the next issue or next episode would be just Monster of the Week. And I'd be like, well, what happened? I said, well, they go back and forth. And so I said, well, call me when they get back to the conspiracy. And they always ended up with big conspiracy. I thought Carter left money on the bank by not having another movie in 2012 and wrap everything up.
Well, because the movie in 2009 didn't do that well.
Because he did the same bullshit he did on the TV show. He just went back to the Monster of the Week format, and he should have been going with the conspiracy one.
Do you know why he had to do the Monster of the Week for the movie?
I don't know.
The budget was cut to minuscule amounts.
Ah, so they're doing the old Planet of the Apes routine. Let's just keep cutting budget and hope we make more money.
And that movie was put together during the strike. That's the only way he was able to do it. It's like, well, do you have anything laying around? Because we can't hire any writers. And he said, well, I've got this two-parter that we didn't film. We could update it and put it, you know, post-series.
And kill the franchise. Good thinking, people.
Well, the franchise was pretty much already done anyway. It was, what do you have sitting around that we could make? And I don't want to bore people with a lot of stuff, but when that writer's strike hit, you saw a lot of stuff being pulled off the shelf. Because it's, well, we have to keep giving product to theaters. Mm. There were movies put out like a year after the writer's strike that had been sitting on the shelf since 2002. They were filmed, done. They showed to test audiences, and the test audiences went, eh. So it was, well, we got to have something. Got to put out, you know, we have to fill theaters. there were a lot of movies where it's, well, this script, it's already paid for. It's just been sitting here. I guess we won't pay anybody to rewrite it. We'll just film it. Kind of like with Star Trek The Next Generation. It started during the TV writers' strike. So a lot of that first season were reworked scripts from the...
It's supposed to be a Star Trek TV show.
Yeah, the Star Trek TV show from 77, 78 that never got off the ground. They just took that and, okay, instead of Kirk, Picard, instead of Spock, Data, you know, on like that.
I have...
Are you watching Orphan Black, the show that's on after Doctor Who?
No, my wife's recording
it's really good.
My wife's recording it because she wants to watch it. Although, I don't know if she set it up to record more than 5 episodes. I know we can, like, bank 10 at one time.
Well, you better set it up because 5th episode ran this week.
Yeah. I have
Orphan Black is really good.
I have got to get me some of the Avengers duct tape. It's out by Sirtec, and they have had brands sold through mass merchant craft hardware stores, food stores, drug stores. They've done sports and things. This is the first time they've done superheroes. So it will allow you to add a historic twist to repairs, crafting, and kidnapping. Yes, Avengers duct tape. Anybody sees it, let me know, because you know I'll be looking for it. The other thing I've been freaking on, I picked up a copy of Wrestlers Are Like Seagulls from McMahon to McMahon by James J. Dillon. And if you don't know who James J. Dillon is, you obviously don't know who the Four Horsemen are. You don't know who Ric Flair, Tully Blanchard, Ole Anderson, and Arn Anderson are. And there's probably no reason we should go into it. But what I'm geeking on about this book is when I open it up, it was autographed by Jade Dillon.
Oh, cool.
And it wasn't one of those autographs that was like to somebody. It was just all the best from Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen forever, dated May 9th, 2011. And, you know, I like wrestling books, so I'm looking forward to this. The final thing I'm geeking on is in 4 hours, I'm going to get myself a massage.
Ooh.
Now that's one way to beat the cold. Corey, what are you geeking on?
Comic-wise, I'm getting caught up on a lot of stuff. I am reading a book that I didn't even know came out. You know, the Marvel Firsts trade paperbacks they're doing?
Yeah.
They have done one for the characters of the 40s.
Hmm.
And it's got, you know, the characters you know, the Human Torch, Submariner, Captain America. It reprints the entire first Young Allies story, which I had forgot just how racist that was. But it's tons of first appearances of the Marvel characters of the 40s, like the Ferret, the Angel, Underground Secret Agent. And my favorite so far, the Vagabond.
That sounds like an obscure character.
The Vagabond is a hobo who fights crime, who has a big red clown nose and clown lips. But he's your typical hobo, you know, with the beat up clothes and the bindle, you know, the kerchief that holds all his stuff tied to a stick. It's called a bindle stick. He's a hobo who goes from town to town fighting crime.
That's been my life ambition.
You know what? You know how they, every so often fans will go, well, what character would you like to bring back and write if you could write for comics? Now that I've read The Vagabond, I want to do The Vagabond. I want to do a modern updated version.
Sounds like a bad dance. I want to do The Vagabond.
I got caught up on a series that I enjoy, but I only read in big chunks, and that is the comic Chew. From Image.
Yeah, I'm behind on mine, unfortunately.
If you have not read Chew, Chew is set in kind of a science fiction-y world where chickens have become outlawed because they are so prone to food poisoning and everything, so nobody eats chicken, and meat is very rare. And the lead character is a cop who works for the FDA. The FDA isn't, you know, the people who inspect your food anymore. They're the people who track down the people who, you know, sell chicken in the black market and things like that. And the lead character is a psychopath, which means if he eats something, he can tell you everything about it. And even with that silly premise, there are times when it's very, very silly and times when it's very, very serious. And it's a comic I really enjoy. It's the art is very untraditional, so when you pick it up, it doesn't look like anything else. But just get into it, and by an issue or two, you understand why the artists are on the way it is, and the story is just very strange fun. And the other thing I read was Grant Morrison's indie book for Image called Happy. And Happy is definitely for adults. It is very dark and very strange and very Alan Moore, and I love it very much.
Cool.
4-issue miniseries. So that's what I'm geeking on.
Neat.
Now, next week, it'll be a very special episode, Joe.
It's been a while since we had one, so I suppose I can't bitterly complain about it.
Well, and it's not that, you know, Gordon Jump, you know, felt you up in the back of his bike shop. No, we're going to go over the Free Comic Book Day comics. We're going to have our 5 favorite and the 5 we probably won't be reading again.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
And we may even have a special guest.
Ah, good. That'll make it a very...
Don't know if we'll have a special guest, but we might.
Very special.
Well, kids, as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic you like the most. Joe?
I feel like dancing. Somebody call my mama. Hit my music.
Funk is on a roll. Aye. Funk is on a roll.
Hey, 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 yo. Funk is on a roll. Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky up in here.